Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, Rare Soldier's Diary reveals secret massacre of Indigenous Tasmanians after almost 200 years. A Soldier's Diary, integrating in Ireland's National Library, has revealed disturbing evidence of an undocumented massacre of Aboriginal people in Tasmania in the colonial's early years. The diary belonged to Private Robert McNally, posted to Van Diemen's Land in the 1820s, and records in gritty detail colonial life and encounters with settlers and a notorious bushranger. But it's his account of his part in the cover-up of a massacre of men and women on March 21, 1827, near Campbelltown in the Northern Midlands that stunned University of Tasmania history, Professor Pam Sharp. We've got Professor Pam on the line. Very good morning, Professor Pam. How are you?
Morning. Very good, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. And look, a very important conversation. They say oil always rises to the top. So the diary has released this information and a lot of massacres that happened in this country was not spoke of or wasn't recorded, but through this soldier's diary, it was, yes?
That's right. So this is not an official diary at all. It's really what Robert McNally sees, hears and feels as he goes around doing his job as a soldier in the mid-1820s. And in this instance, he's on the Sutherland estate near Campbelltown called Rothbury. And a stockman on the estate wants to talk to him. And so they have a discussion, and the stockman says, well, I've killed six people, six Aboriginal people. Two women, what do I do now? And Robert says, well, you know, there'll be a huge hoo-ha, basically. You'll be investigated. I think you should really just dispose of the bodies. And the stockman says, well, I'll burn the bodies. Mm. And we've got a diary, actually, from the Sutherlands who own the estate, and they're going through a bit of a domestic crisis at the time. Their young child has been injured in an accident, but you know, there's absolutely no mention of the massacre. Yeah.
So where did you come across the diary? Sorry, explain that, please, Professor.
I came across it by accident in the National Library of Ireland. I was doing some research in the UK. I was going on holiday to Ireland, and I knew that there were a couple of documents I wanted to look at in that library in Dublin. And when I looked on the online catalogue, I just found this reference, and it didn't sound very promising. It said, damaged anonymous diary of soldier in various places, including New South Wales and Van Diemen's Land, but I thought I'd have a look, and it really is quite an incredible document.
So, in actual fact, you didn't find the diary found you, Professor.
That's right, yes, that's right. And it's very unusual because ordinary soldiers in the 1820s were often not literate. They might have been able to read, but not write.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Professor McNally, well, he wrote it in his diary. It was a personal diary, because massacres across this country were virtually hidden. Yeah, it was you could say against the law, but massacres did happen, and as you just stated there, the bushranger didn't want to get caught being caught as a murderer.
Absolutely, and I mean it would account for, you know, the Aboriginal population being decimated between 1803 and the 1830s. Clearly, you know, a lot of this was going on undercover. And I mean, if you think about Tasmania, there's lots of places to hide. I mean, there's lots of areas where things would never be discovered or reported. Yeah.
So the Dory, you could say, by McNally was, it's just authenticity, you know, in regard to its truth to the writing as he wrote in his diary.
We're going through it forensically at the moment, so it's a work in progress. He certainly, it's very, very large. The first volume, there's two volumes, and the first volume's 150,000 words. I think we've established that he wrote it, but I think he wrote notes when he was moving around in Tasmania, like a log.
Yes.
And then I think he wrote it into a memoir when he returned to Ireland.
Yeah, so so very important that the conversation with we as First Nation people and with love and respect of our First Nation brothers and sisters in Tasmania, but you know, not that we say it as a joke, but because the massacres were strong in Tasmania, we believe here on the mainland that there's no brothers and sisters in Tasmania, you know, with respect to our mob down that way.
Absolutely.
Because the massacre was high, and here's proof of that. But we do have our mob down there, of course, and they are strong and living today in the 21st century. But it has been exposed regarding, another evidence of massacres in this country of our people.
Yes, that's right. And, I mean, there's a few other instances. There's one where in April 1826, McNally's on the job when a head is removed from a recently died Aboriginal man who dies at a corroboree, and it makes it clear that they're sending the head to London for scientific purposes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so is there any communication, Professor, with the First Nation people in Tasmania regarding your findings or to get to the bottom of it?
I'm having some communication this week. Of course, this is an important week because the Tasmanian Museum and Art Gallery and the Royal Society are making an apology at 12 o'clock today to the Aboriginal people for their stealing of items, body parts, and they've undertaken to return a piece of rock art, significant rock art, to the northwest of Tasmania during March. So that's a very, very important development.
And that's happening today, and the apology, and look, I've got goosebumps here, the fact that we're talking about the soldier's diary, which was revealed as the secrets of the massacre of Indigenous Tasmanians after 200 years.
That's right, yes. Yeah. I mean, I would say that this man, McNally, who's quite remarkable, really, he sometimes appears quite modern. He's fairly sympathetic to the Aborigines. There's no evidence that he actually killed anyone himself, and that would have been an offence, of course.
Sure.
But he's well aware.
He just recorded it in his diary. That's all he did.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it has been exposed, and like I said, it's sad. Australia has a history, black and white, good or bad, but the history is a history. And so with you as a professor finding this information, what happens with this information then? Does it then go to records as such, or is it put to the government or to the First Nation people in Tasmania? What do we do with this information, Professor?
Well, I want to... I want to produce a book where it's all in there with as much as that we know about it as we have found.
Yes.
And we need to involve the Aboriginal community in this as well, because they may be able to help us with some of the interpretation of what's going on. And we can't just have, you know, our own. I mean, I'm a white originally English person. We can't just have that perspective on it. Actually, exactly. I mean, I'm kind of new to this area, but I'm a bit shocked that so far there's often been histories written of, you know, Aboriginal people that really don't seem to have consulted Aboriginal.
But your eyes have fell on this diary, and I think a nice pair of eyes with respect, Professor, the fact that you're exposing it or getting the story out, and the truth should come forth, so to speak. So it fell in good eyes is what I'm saying.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Because some things, like I said, massacres were hidden, and best to keep it underneath the carpet, so to speak. But the truth should be revealed, and it is by the McNally's diary. So very important conversation. There are conversations happening with the First Nation people down in Tasmania?
That's right.
Good.
This week even.
Yes.
Well,
I'll be keeping a close eye on it. Please do keep in touch, and looking for the outcome, whether it be a book, come movie, the story needs to be told. And thank you very much, Professor.
Thanks very much.
You take care. Bye. All the best to you. Bye-bye. That's Professor Pam Sharp, University of Tasmania, and the finding of a soldier's diary and a disintegrating in Ireland's National Library. It has revealed disturbing evidence of an undocumented massacre of Aboriginal people in Tasmania in the colony's early years. So, look, a very important conversation. And Professor Pam wasn't actually investigating as such. She was over in Ireland and wanted to go to the National Library there to research a few other things. And this came across her eyes. And she went further in regarding investigated and turned it now into the digital sense, so we can hear the story of the soldier, McNally. And that's Robert McNally. So, yeah, there it is. Massacres did happen in this country, and a lot of it was hidden. But as we say, oil always rises to the top, and the truth shall be heard, shall be told. Have your say, Jan Armstrong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yana with the Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie. I'm your host for the daily program, National Talk Black, and I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Give the Murray a call. Let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416.
Thousand years was long ago. People lived the way we would know. One with the creation of the land is something we don't quite understand. The eagle soars, a dreaming began. The rainbow serpent came from underground. And no ago or so, a white dude came and landed on a shore. The first of those that could not understand how these different people love the land. Get down,
down, get down. And oh, we understand, you gotta get a little bit funky when you can. We rounded up the clans and took away the land they lived. We tried to wipe them out and give them to the crown was kids. We stole away their soul, the treaties all they're asking us for. Don't you think it's time we recognize the first here? Don't you think it's time the Constitution made it clear?
Mob, it's me, Bush Tucker Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Macaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422.
Yeah, to Delhi Mob, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, at BBM, Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. If you're on the shy side, text a brother, 045-714-0550. But don't act, we know your mob not shy. And our Facebook, for our Facebook warriors, yeah, your BBM, 98.7 FM. In actual fact, the news, Facebook, we've been cut out. That's another yarn. I need to bring you mob up to date, up to speed with what's happening there. BBM's Facebook page has been blocked, but you still stay up to date with us on Instagram or Twitter. In regards to the news that's come out, Facebook can't be trusted for reliable news, says government, as Mark Zuckerberg speaks to the treasurer. And so there's a big on full on conversations, and I'll get to that. But we're going to go now to our BBM freelancer journo. That's Carly Willis, and she's having a yarn with Darren Blackman, Indigenous artist and Wick and Google Arts Centre studio facilitator. So do check it out. Have a listen.
Thank you for coming to have a yarn today with us, Darren. Can you please start by introducing yourself, your full name, who's your mob and where you're from?
Okay, thanks for having me, Carly. I'm Darren Blackman. I'm from the Gurang Gurang and Gungalu Nations. Gurang Gurang's down Bundaberg region, north to Gladstone, and Gungalu is a neighbouring mob behind that, towards Mount Morgan, Billawheeler way. I'm living in on the country up at Arakoon, where it's very hot at the moment, and then when it's not hot, it's just pouring rain. So we're in the middle of the wet season.
Wow.
We work for an employment agency, a job agency up in Arakoon. Been here for 6 months, and before that I was at the Wiccan Kugu Arts Centre.
And you still are quite involved in the arts at all times, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm an artist myself. I came up here to work at the Wiccan Kugu Arts Centre because my brother was up here in the 90s as a teacher, then moved across to, well, it wasn't an art centre there, it was arts and crafts. So I was always interested in coming up to Wick Country. So now I'm up here. I was working with some of the same artists and elders that work there, and it's just really good making that connection with the people up here.
So how did COVID affect you? Were you on Wick Country during COVID, and how did it affect you?
Yeah, well, it was sort of weird because we were so detached from what was happening. I suppose it first affected me, I think, March when they put the closures, when they shut down a lot of things in Queensland. I was exhibiting at the opening of Northside in Cairns, so I just managed to get my artwork away and was preparing to fly down there for the opening, and then it got called off. And that's when all, I suppose, flights to and from Aurukun and the rest of the Cape was closed off to the rest of Queensland, which was great. We felt safe on community, but at the same time, because the communities are under sort of a lot of federal jurisdiction, that a lot of the CDP work for the Dole programs had stopped, so a lot of people were put off work. But otherwise, life sort of continued as normal. Like I was really lucky; I could still go to work, and we could still go fishing. We could still go down the shop. But if we went down the shop or went to the post office, you had the dots on the floor where you had to be 1.5 apart. There's only like 3 people allowed in the post office, and then. You know, if anybody had sniffles or that, and we were at the clinic, you had to get swabbed and then had to wear a face mask. But we all felt safe up here. And then only recently, they like I think it was July, restrictions finished, and we could sort of go to Cairns. I was able to go back down to Nambour, where I grew up, and see my family and that, because I was a bit worried about the old people. I was like, wanted to go down there and touch base with them. And but otherwise, we were so detached. I was a bit scared when I first went in the Cairns with people getting on the escalator behind me or something. Because we just watched this stuff on TV, you know, so it was freaking us out if we left.
Yes, yep. So that detachment was just like... building up even more, you know, because you couldn't see the progress. So it's kind of like you just, I can see the feeling is sort of portraying there.
Be asking friends, what's happening? Like, do you just have to wear masks? Do you have to stand apart? Like, so I was, you know, we're trying to stick by that, but Cairns people especially, they just... No shame, they'd just be standing right up behind you or in front of you. It's like, man.
Yeah, and especially at that first beginning time. And restrictions were, you know, even stricter on our Indigenous communities, you know. Did that sort of impact you in any way, or how did you find those? Because, you know, it was also people coming into the community as well as, you know, your ability to leave it. So it was also, you know, stopping things from coming in. Did that affect your day-to-day at all?
Mainly just, like, if there was sorry business and stuff on, but they got it sorted.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly, where people would have to apply for a permit so they could, say, travel from Kanyam or Pomperan, come here for sorry business or something.
Yeah.
It really affected the school kids when the kids that were away or boarding school or wherever they go to school, if they came back for Easter time.
Yeah.
A lot of them were trapped here. So there were, thankfully, like, there's some great teachers up here in Aurukun, and they would chase up their schools to try and continue their schooling, try and keep them going through the COVID period. But I think for the rest of us that were on community, we were lucky. We're just feeling for all those other people, you know, that were stuck somewhere else.
Yeah. And what about, like I think you just said, for a time there was the work for the doll packages had been stop-paused, so people, not everybody had work. What about employment in general? Did that sort of impact the community, that closure, or how did it impact you? You said you pretty much could keep going to work, hey?
Yeah,
like, I was
working for Arakoon Shire Council with the Arts Centre.
Mm-hmm.
I was still employed, but like the people that were on job search, I suppose, the people that turn up to their activities, whether it's the Arts Centre, Men's Shed, the community improvement, hospitality and retail and stuff, so the people that were going to those activities, it stopped. So people were left, I suppose, up to their own devices, they were home. So it's sort of the rhythm of the community sort of went out of whack. And it was, you know, went into like this big period of a lot of people not working.
Yeah.
And now we've started again. We've just got to get that rhythm back.
Yeah.
And it's really hard because people have sort of might have gone to Mornington or somewhere for sorry business, or people are still out away from Arakoon and just getting that sort of flow and get that routine back. And everything's about sort of turning up to activity, ticking these boxes, signing this and that, just so they can start that sort of payment again. So
yeah,
we're still settling into that. But
yeah,
I was pretty impressed, like when it first started, people were flowing back because people are keen, people want to go back and do stuff, you know.
And the
community, especially after the wet, it's just gone crazy with overgrowth and stuff. So we just need that flow, getting back to community, getting back to where it was before COVID.
And what about, you know, what's the feel with restrictions? Because, you know, in Cairns, the feeling is getting more and more positive with the easing of restrictions. And what's the easing, you know, is the easing having that positive effect as well for you guys?
Yeah, I think so. Like I say, just people getting back to work again, getting back to their rhythm and stuff. And like I say, it's a bit bumpy at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just great to see people busy again and sort of the town having a bit more life. You know, we've got the ladies are planting veggie fruit garden at the training centre. So sort of, you know, there's going to be some sort of thing happening in the middle of town, which like the community really enjoys seeing that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so and the ladies are getting a kick out of it because people are like pulling up and they're getting compliments and stuff. And yeah, but you know what? We get trapped every wet season, so we're pretty used to being being cut off, anyways. But you know, God bless them, they'll still get on that road and head up to Weeper, even though it's not even flooded.
And what are you doing to recover, you know, from that time? I know you said you're used to being a little bit cut off and you were lucky, but what are you doing to sort of recover or help your friends recover? I don't know.
Well, working at a job agency, it's good. I get to engage more with the community.
Mm-hmm.
And the crew I work for, they're great. So we, you know, we're there for the community. Like, we've got things we have to do, but we've got those, you've got to be more fluid when you're out here. And because of culture, you know,
mm-hmm.
you're doing all sorts of things. And
yeah,
so it's just like supporting the community, just helping everyone get back into the flow of stuff. And just being respectful of stuff that's happening in the community culturally.
Yeah, lovely. And how I see that. I know you're not working at the Art Centre, but I've seen them posting. They seem to be really active again. I see them keep posting, you know, painting things, making things. So it seems like the arts community is getting a bit back into rhythm.
No, I just came from there like half an hour ago. It's buzzing. It's really great to see. And, of course, they're happy because the boys and the ladies, they were around the gate like nearly every day for a couple of months trying to get in. And I think, you know, it's culture. It's what they do. And it's, you know, for them it's not just... it's not just art. Mm-hmm. It's not just exhibitions and stuff that's secondary to what they're doing, you know, like they love it. So they've just got a new arts coordinator at the Wiccan Kugu, and the ladies art centre, that's humming along. They've got projects and working up to CIAF. I know they're working on something really awesome that I don't want to... it's exciting, and I'm excited. And, you know, the ladies have been... They're a force to be reckoned with, you know. The boys are always seem to be out there with their dogs and stuff. But, they're so talented. Like, the talent up here is amazing. Like, I had to go to school to draw and do stuff, but these guys, they just have this natural way and this... beautiful way of expressing themselves. It's great to see. So they're going for it.
I think I've seen a post every other day, so I'm like, feels exciting. And is there anything else you'd like to add? I don't know, anything you'd like to tell us, anything like else happening?
Oh, just a big shout out to people in Wick Country. You know, they don't sort of get good press a lot of times, but and a lot of people that come here that do workshops and stuff for Mob. You know, they're so surprised about Arakoon and how beautiful the people and the country is up here, because all they see is what they read in the paper.
Yeah,
but. It's an awesome place. It's powerful, and you know, the changing of the seasons, like, it's amazing, just the different ways that the country and all the migrating birds and stuff happens. Like, it's awesome. I love being up here.
I'll have to definitely come and see one of these changes of seasons for myself.
I reckon probably one of my favourites is just before or just after the wet.
Okay.
Because then you get like all these flocks of migrating birds and stuff, and it's either coming onto green or just going into the dry. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, too deadly. That's a beautiful interview there by Carly Willis, a BBM freelance journo. Good on you, Carly. Fantastic. And Yarn and there with Darren Blackman, Indigenous artist and Wick Kugu Artist Centre Studio Facilitator. So too deadly. Have your say, Yarn Strong here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Call the number, Yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, there's a news break here, news report here by political reporter Jack Snape. Facebook can't be trusted for reliable news, says government, as Mark Zuckerberg speaks to the Treasurer. Facebook's credibility as a source for news should be questioned, according to Communications Minister Paul Fletcher, who has warned content on the site would now come from groups without fast-checking capabilities or stringent editorial policies. Facebook banned Australia Australians users from accessing news in their feeds this morning as the government pursues laws that would force it to pay publishers for journalism that appears in people's feeds. The government said it was continuing to talk with Facebook and founder Mark Zuckerberg, has already spoken to Treasurer Josh Frydenberg this morning. Mr. Frydenberg described his 30-minute conversation as very cordial and very constructive. You could say, sweet, we want them to remain in Australia, but we also want them to pay original content. He said, yes, there are some differences, but let's see if we can't work them through. Facebook has said the proposed laws fundamentally misunderstood the relationship between their platform and publishers who use it to share news content. It said it faced the stark choice between attempting to comply with the law or banning news content on its services in Australia, and with a heavy heart, it was chosen the latter. Mr. Fletcher said the government should continue to move ahead with legislation, the code. He said Facebook's decision to remove access to news for Australians raised questions about whether people could trust what they saw on the platform. Facebook needs to think very carefully about what this means and its reputation standing, he had told the ABC. So that's where it is at the moment. So for all our BBM listeners there, Facebook page has been blocked, but you can still stay up to date with us on Instagram and Twitter. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you saying Yana Strong? 1-800-422-416. And apparently we've got Michelle on the line calling from Perth and going to have a yarn with Michelle. Michelle, you there? Oh, Michelle's not there. We'll try and get Michelle back from WA and add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. We'll try again. We got Michelle, my sister. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, my brother boy. How are you?
I'm well. You're on the campaign, aren't you?
Yes, I'm going very strong, very strong in the campaign.
For the West Australia, yep.
Yes, we've made some phenomenal announcements around some funding in the Central Wheat Belt.
Good.
So Central Wheat Belt is really getting on the map.
Yes.
But why I am calling, brother boy, is I'm putting a shout-out out there to get some of my family to help on the polling days,
yes,
handing out how to vote cards, because I think it's important that we show a presence,
yes,
on these particular days to support not just myself, but to support our presence,
yes,
our issues, and to make a united front. And so if any of my people are out there listening, which I know they will be because your show's a fabulous show and everybody gets up and listens to
you. Thank you, sister.
Every day.
So, Michelle, what's your surname, darling?
Nelson.
Okay, Michelle Nelson. And you're throwing your hat in the political arena for the next up-and-coming WA election, state election. Which area are you running for, Michelle?
So if they was to look at my Facebook page, which is Michelle Nelson for Central Wheat Belt, there is a list of contact numbers there that they can call if they can help in their region.
Yes.
It'll show the region of where I'm running. Good. And I know I've got family in all those regions. And I would really love my mob to get behind and just and show this mob that we can get out there, because I don't think Noongar people really get out there and show our presence enough.
Yes.
But it's an opportunity for us to certainly, get to know our community a lot more than
exactly
what we've been doing.
Exactly.
You know?
And what you're talking about here, it's a team effort, isn't it? You can't win the election by yourself. It is a team effort, and the people helping at the booths, that's part of the teamwork, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I've been trying to scale myself very thinly, and getting out there and meeting a lot of people as much as I can, and of course these are on voluntary basis, so you've got to fund your own way, obviously,
of
until
course
the elections. And I don't mind doing that, because it brings me kinship and memories of the journeys that I used to do as a child, and bring back all that childhood memories and the stories that the old fellas used to tell us. So
exactly.
I relive all that, and the beauty about it is when I do travel these roads, I'm travelling with a lot of spirits that I know are just guiding me safely to complete my journey and certainly to complete my achievements in what I wanted to do in making and contributing change to government. And Mark McGowan, our state government, has done a phenomenal job, you know, for not only Aboriginal people but WA in particular.
Yes.
And we know that he's going to get re-elected because he's just one
too
of those
deadly
guys that make those hardcore decisions.
Exactly. Yep.
And he's real down to earth, and he's just admirational and inspirational to us as Aboriginal people. And when he's the only premier that I know that that did approach Aboriginal people to run as candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very taken back when he chose me, because I just thought, you know, finally we've got people of power that really want presence of Aboriginal caliber and strong black fellas at that sitting in the house, the big house that makes the decisions
exactly
on behalf of our community. So if there's anyone out there that can give me a hand on the day, I would really, really appreciate it. I love all my family. I love my community. I love who I represent. But more importantly, I want to contribute to change and improve the equality of our community in the Central Wheat Belt area.
Too deadly, my sister. And if you want changes in life, you've got to make changes. So you threw your hat.
Changes.
Yeah, that's right. And you threw your hat in an arena, and you're now looking for that support. And to the mob out there, step up, help Michelle Nelson for the next election, the up and coming state election, WA. More power to you, my sister. And who's the other two sisters running in the election as well?
So Cherie Sivisado.
Yep.
She's running for the Northwest Central. And we also have Davina Deanna. She's running for the Kimberleys. So we've got so far and if Josie Farah still retains her position,
yes,
we've got four Aboriginal women.
Beautiful.
Sitting in Parliament. Should we all get in?
Yeah.
And that's not making a statement that times are changing and it's not hard to get in and make those changes, but we want to open doorways, pathways and career opportunities for young kids now to take on these leadership roles and be a future premier of our state. And who knows, we can have there's somewhere out there, I know that there is a young black deadly prime minister in the waiting that's waiting to
yes
be groomed, and we can do that.
We can, do,
we can
that.
Do that.
Fantastic, my sister. All the best to you, and big shout
thank
out to the WA mob, Noongar mob, and thank you very
yes
much, and we'll be in touch, hey sis.
And take care, all you Queenslanders too. You're a solid mob.
Too deadly. Thanks, Michelle.
Okay, the brother boy. Take care.
Oh, that's Michelle Nelson there, sister from WA, a candidate running in the next state election over there in WA, and she's just calling out for support and for the up-and-coming election and regarding the booths and what have you. So, look, check out her Facebook page and chase up any information, all the contact details there. Anyway, you can support her. It would be fantastic. Have you say you might be on up strong. Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, that deadly number 1-800-422-416.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
I wanna live my life like a coconut.
I wanna be free. I wanna live my life like a coconut, living in harmony. Coconut hang from the tall palm tree, fall to the ground, float on the sea, push by the tide and wind and waves, moving on to a different place. Some coconuts grow into strong palm trees, some may die or lose their leaves, living a life far away from where it began yesterday. I wanna live my life like a coconut, I wanna be free.
Yeah, the coconut song there, Jeff Ashman here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. Now, TGA approves AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine. The TGA is the Therapeutic Goods Administration, has approved the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine for use in Australia following a full and thorough assessment process. And Federal Leichhardt MP Warren Inch said that this welcomes new means Australia will now have two safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines available. The approval of the AstraZeneca vaccine for the people of Cairns, Cape York and Torres Straits and for the whole of Australia comes after rigorous assessment from our independent medical regulator. We have Mr. Inch on the line. Warren, very good morning. How are you?
Deadly Trev.
Yeah, my brother. Look, thank you for coming to the program. Look, very important news in the world that we're living in at the moment. Looking for a vaccine. It's come to the table. Oil rises to the top, yes?
And, mate, we've got to make sure everybody lines up to get one of these things. I mean, they'll be done out in nursing homes first.
Yes.
And people, you know, healthcare people, emergency care people will get it. They're the first ones to get it. Then geriatrics like myself, us older ones will be coming in. No, mature age, mate, the elders.
Mature age, yes.
Yeah, we've got to protect our elders.
Exactly.
And then they're hoping to get the whole rollout by October.
Okay.
Now, as you said, the AstraZeneca one has just been approved, I think, yesterday.
Mm.
The Pfizer one, which is the one that's required to be kept at minus 70 degrees, mm-hmm. had already been approved, and that's here in the country, and they're going to
minus 70 degrees. That just sounds like an ice block.
Well, it is, and they keep them. But what's fascinating with this? I mean, irrespective of which one you get, the AstraZeneca one can be kept at room temperature.
Okay.
The other one, of course, is got those much lower temperatures, but they are dispatched in these special containers,
mm-hmm.
that not only maintain absolutely the required temperature,
mm.
but they've got GPS tracking on them, and they are actually tracked by the manufacturer in Europe.
Okay.
Irrespective of where they are in the world.
Technology.
They know exactly where they are at any time. They know exactly what the temperatures are. They know exactly what the condition of they are that they are. So when they're taken out, I mean, there's a window of opportunity when they come out, and when they're taking them out of that container. They're specially built containers.
Yes.
And they can go anywhere. You know, you could take them up to Boigu or Murray Island, or you could take them out to Kawanyama or Mapoon or Locker, anywhere.
Mm.
Warren,
with the vaccine, what's the process? Is it compulsory? And what happens to people who don't get the jab? Do they lose their job?
No. Absolutely. No. They are not compulsory.
Okay.
And, you know, you've always got the anti-vaxxers out there running around saying, hey, we've got to, you know, everything from, you know, putting in microchips to all sorts of things. But the reality is, particularly with our First Nations people, they are so exposed to, as
exactly.
they are, so many other of these diseases, it's absolutely critical. That's the reason why all of Cape York and Torres Strait were shut down when this first happened.
Exactly. So it's not compulsory, but it's highly recommended, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I mean, the major impact is going to be on our elders. And we're seeing... See, the great thing about this, Trev, is that there's been a whole lot of them done around the world.
Yes.
We're the first country that had actually sat back and waited. The others were done under emergency declaration, so they weren't fully assessed, but they were sufficient, and it was emergency situation, so they were quite prepared to do it, and they have done it. For example, in Israel, about 80%, 80% of the population's been done.
Yep.
Well, they've had no side effects. The incidence of COVID has dropped through the floor. The death rate have dropped. Death rate has dropped through the floor.
Mm.
It's been quite amazing.
Yeah.
And so we've had the additional benefit of watching, you know, those millions of people now that have been already vaccinated under an emergency declaration.
Yep.
And that's been done in the UK, in the US, in Europe, in among many other nations, and China and Russia and what have you. And we have taken the time to go through the full assessment process. Now, both of the products that we're recommending have not gone through just an emergency one. They've gone through the full assessment as they have any other medication.
Yes.
If you take an aspirin.
Well, when you've got the TGA that approves it, then that means that it was done.
Approved.
Yeah.
And so they are absolutely safe in relation to, you know, side effects, et cetera, et cetera. And there is absolutely no reason why you can't. Now, the other thing is that you need to get the majority of the community, because they have what they call a herd immunity. So they need to get around about 70 or 80% of the population of any community immunised. But, you know, the same as you go for any other vaccine, and which 96-97% of our population is, this is absolutely no different. So as soon as the opportunity does,
take it on board. I've got to go to the news, but thank you very much, Warren. We're going to be in touch, my friend.
Okay, mate. Well, I'm lining up, and I hope, Trev, you're going to be lining up as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you. That's Warren Inch there, Federal Leichhardt MP Minister, and talking about the vaccine is not compulsory, and you won't lose your job if you don't get the jab, but it's highly recommended that you take on the vaccine. There it is. We'll be yarning soon. Your mob, look, thank you for your company. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, do stay safe. We are still in the pandemic, and that's why there's a vaccine out and about. But, look, stay tuned to your Daily Murray Radio Station. Trinity Trev sign off, and we'll be on it soon. Too deadly.